Right.
Thunderbirds a go.
Five. Four.
Hello and welcome to the Stormcock podcast. This is episode number 29 for March 2010, and this is the Nick Harper special number 2. In this show we have some news, an interview with Nick Harper, listener feedback and a selection of music. First off, let's have some news, and I think probably most of you that look at Harper stuff online will have realised by now that Roy is gigging again in a limited capacity. He was asked by Joanna Newsom to support her on some European dates, and he agreed. So in May, on May the 11th and 12th, which is very fortunate because May the 11th happens to be my birthday, he's helping her play at the Royal Festival Hall in London. On May the 14th, he's playing at the Cirque Royale in Brussels, Belgium. On May the 30th, he's playing in Amsterdam at a place that I can't even begin to pronounce. And finally, on May the 31st, he's playing in Paris, in France. And this is fantastic news. Now, he's obviously only doing a support slot, so we don't know how long he'll be playing for. Up to an hour, I'd say. Now, tickets for these gigs went extremely quickly, mainly to Joanna Newsom fans, I should imagine, and her new album, Have One On Me, is absolutely excellent. But it's what sort of artist these days would actually bring out a triple album? It's 2 hours long. It's really good, though. It starts off very reminiscent of Kate Bush, I think. But then she finds her own style as well, and I think it's so good. I'm really looking forward to the gigs to see her as well as Roy, of course. I'm going to be at both the Royal Festival Hall gigs. And as you can well imagine, I can hardly wait to see him play live again, because I'd seriously given up hope, to be frank, that this would happen again. And let's hope he gets the bug, decides to go on a proper tour at some point in the future. Fingers crossed on that anyway. And Nick Harper has a new album out called The Last Guitar, and is currently on tour around the UK on a punishing schedule. And as some of you may know, I live in Hertford in Hertfordshire, and we were stunned, absolutely stunned, to see that Nick was due to play at our local venue, the Corn Exchange, last Friday, in fact. Wonderful. I mean, I could actually walk to a gig of somebody I really wanted to see. This is unheard of around here, I tell you. And so I contacted Nick before the gig and said, oh, any chance of another interview and, you know, to catch up on what's been going on? And he said, yeah, sure. So we met up before the gig for a bite to eat in a curry house. So when you get to the interview, you'll have this wonderful stereo binaural curry house effect, which I hope will add to the whole experience. But before we get on to that, I think we'll have a track, and I'm going to play a track from the new album. This is One of the 38.
Walk the streets alone, like the man with no name. Into the bar before the show, but on another plane. And the faces turn my way, I narrow my eyes, like I met my maker. But I did not die. But there'll be no gunplay, no widow to cry, and the undertaker walks on by. Wherever I go, whatever. Colder with it. Ooh, it's filled with the voices of the cherubim. And in the tiny houses with the lights on inside, where the little devils play seek and hide. But there's a bigger picture, there's a world out there. What are your troubles? What are your cares? Wherever I go, whatever my fate, I am one of the 38, of the 38.
I thought we'd wing it this time, actually. So I had loads of questions last time, and, you know, I thought, now I've been doing it for a couple of years, we'd go for the free-form approach.
Okay. I always go for the free-form approach.
That's what I was thinking.
Did you notice that your questions bear very little relation
that's
to the answers?
Why I haven't bothered writing any questions down. But I was too polite to say that.
Yeah.
So, what do you want to talk about? No. So, tell us what's new in the world of Nick since
world
last
of Nick
time we spoke.
Is unfortunately rain. It's just started coming down from the sky, the British way. What's new in my world? New CD.
It does exist. The Last
Which
Guitar.
Is, yeah, very exciting. My children, my CDs, as you know. I've been buried, totally buried in this one, so, which is great. I love it. It's a total escape recording music, and it's why I think why my CDs come out a little bit eclectic.
Buried in what way? Just completely absorbed?
Just absorbed completely. It's fairly stressful but liberating at the same time. When you're intensely involved with the project, as a lot of people will know, probably yourself, it sort of devours you, and
you've got a compulsive nature, which I think a lot of us do.
I
can really
so,
throw
yeah.
yourself
Have
into
you?
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well done.
Thank you.
Exactly.
Well done.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you build up a lot of the songs before you actually even approach recording.
Yeah.
But is it a case that you also write some while you're in that sort of mindset as well?
Yes, absolutely.
Because yeah, there's obviously a lot on there that haven't been heard before.
No. And will never be heard again.
Actually, that's a good point, because there are songs that haven't been played live.
Yeah.
Really been played live.
Yeah.
And that people ask for.
Yes.
you've got no hope of remembering the lyrics.
No, well, it would take some time.
Yeah.
In rehearsal. And rehearsal sessions, well, so far in my career, I've done about half an hour in total. So, not a lot of hope for ones that I don't play that often. But I've resurrected or explored a couple for this tour that have come out really well, and I had no idea I'd ever play them live. And
what songs?
Boy Meets Planet.
Oh yeah.
I'm thinking of when I say that. Someone's been asking me to play a song called Song of Madness.
Yeah, I like that one.
Quite a while.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd dust that one off.
That's got a lot of high notes.
It has, yeah. And that sort of drifted into Boy Meets Planet. They seemed to fit together well, and I thought, well, that'd be good, I'll see how it goes. And I played it a couple of times at home and thought, oh, yeah, I'll try that.
Yeah.
And then when I came to play it live, it really worked well, even though I had all the lyrics on the floor by my feet, and I was a bit nervous about, you know, performing it for the first time. But really, the message seemed to get to me anyway, and that's the key. If it makes me feel something, then I think I might be getting somewhere.
Well, that's got to be the whole rationale. You can't be doing it for...
No.
You have to feel it before anybody else can, I'd have thought.
I was saying earlier on to this guy who asked me that, you know, why did I get into music? And it's simply because I loved playing a guitar, and I just played and played because I loved doing it. And there was no ulterior motive, there's no vision of success or riches. It was just playing music at home was,
I think, yeah, if you go in with that, with the dollar signs, you almost doomed to fail.
Well, although, not necessarily, obviously. Some people are really good at that, but not me, I don't think. But,
not for the one of trying.
No.
Well, yeah. So when you approach recording, you're playing, is it right that you're playing with instruments again on this one, or are you other people doing stuff? I haven't actually got the record yet, so I don't know who's on it.
I'm playing almost everything.
Almost everything. So you've got this home studio set up.
Yeah.
And it's all, you know, got your laptop out there and busy noodling away for months and months and months.
It was months and months this time. Yeah. It was probably 4 months, something like that.
Right.
But I started recording it about 18 months ago and quickly realised that the songs weren't there.
Oh, right.
Basically.
Yeah.
And there's about half a dozen songs that are now in the holding bay.
Yes.
Which just didn't really fit. When this album started to take shape, they just didn't fit anymore.
Right. So you haven't deliberately picked a theme or anything?
No,
but you just have this feel for...
Yeah.
What goes, fits in.
Yeah.
You're not a concept album man, really.
Not really, no. Blood songs.
Gatefold Sleeve, you know.
Pardon?
Gatefold Sleeve and Roger
Dean.
Yeah,
well,
it's got to be done.
No, I love getting carried away with the pretension of being an artist, you know, and saying something grand. But really, you know, I write 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 minute pop songs, you know, really, underneath it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I do. I wouldn't get any grander than that. Blood Songs was the only one, I'd say, that I had a theme.
Right, that definitely is, it seems.
In fact, I started off with... there were 4 songs in each, let's call them suites. And there was the blood, there was music... there were 2 other themes, the world and something else, and it was how they all interweave with each other. And I looked at it as and imagined portraying it as that.
Yeah.
And I thought, you cock, you know, just put the album out and stop, you know, come down from there because it's dark and it may be warm, but it's dark, you can't see a thing, so come down from there and release the album. So I gave up that idea. And since then I've just written songs and recorded them, and they've gone to wherever they go to.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I have heard the new album, thanks to somebody who's probably listening to this who I shan't name, but anyway. You know, I'm still absorbing it. But like a lot of your studio output, it's got a lot of instrumentation on it. And obviously when people come and see you live, you get a slightly different...
Yes.
I mean, is this a deliberate choice to make yourself a bit more diverse musically on record, or not musically, but in terms of instruments?
Well, I think if I had the opportunity, I would travel with a band more often.
Yeah, because I remember when you did do a band gig in London, and that was huge energy.
Yeah, really, absolutely. I love being in a gang. It's great, you know, travelling around is much more fun.
Yeah.
And making the music is, I wouldn't say it's more fun, but it's a different way of doing it.
Right.
And I've definitely loved doing that.
It must cost a bomb.
It does. The bar tab's incredible. Of course.
And, exponentially going up per band member.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, but that's not the only reason. I really love the freedom of playing on my own and being on stage.
Yeah.
I can just meander around and go wherever I want, you know, with a song.
Which
or,
you do, literally.
Or with my feet, yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. And that's fantastic. So, all I'm doing is exactly the same thing in the studio. It's just that I happen to have a drum kit there and some bass guitar. And, you know, you're just exploring music and the way you're going to express each song. And there's so much... You know, when you're on the road, you think of it, you're taking a little watercolour set round with, you know, red, green, blue, black and white. But at home, you've got 380 colours to choose from, different shades of everything. And that's the way I see it, anyway. And each song can grow and push through to other areas, you know, that I wouldn't do if I just had my guitar.
Have you ever thought about a duo as like a halfway house?
I think about it all the time. I was part of quite a good duo.
So I believe, yes.
And I'm trying to resurrect that.
Right.
But I don't know. My lawyers are talking to his lawyers, and we'll see. I talked to someone today, a musician today, about doing a double header tour.
Yeah.
And he was interested in that. It's great, that communication you get playing music, you know, you can get in your front room with somebody or on the stage in front of people, whatever.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant thing, it's really great. It's the fundamental language is underneath everything. You know, this what music is really, is a portrayal of the elemental forces of the world, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's like other art forms that somehow exercise the brain in a certain way and make you think about things or expose you to thoughts and things that are difficult to express in other ways.
Mm.
And it, when done right, it's extremely powerful.
Yeah. I think music it communicates the earth and the forces that work on the earth. I really believe this. And it is like an embodiment of those forces. And when you've got two people or more swapping that around, it's like some, in your own imagination. I'm not talking about this as a spectacle. I'm just talking about this as a personal inner thing.
Mm.
It's like the gods hurling fireballs at one another, or wind, or whatever, you know, cloudbursts or whatever. It can be like that.
Mm.
Obviously, I've been drinking all day. this has gone far, but I really do believe
there is this whole thing about music somehow stimulating the brain or being in time with the brain patterns as well. And there is a sort of elemental connection there anyway.
Okay, well, thank you for
that. I don't know whether that's what causes some people to interpret things in a spiritual way or in a ritualistic way or whatever. I don't know. It's an interesting point. I know all about it.
Well, I think we are spiritual beings, not necessarily connected to anything structural that humans have invented, but there is something that we feel we need, and I think music can be a key to get a little bit more of a view of that side of ourselves.
Mm.
You know? It's brilliant stuff.
I mean,
music.
I found it really interesting because, as you know, I'm fairly keen on certain types of music, and I've met a lot of people through those different avenues of music, and I tend to find that people have a certain outlook on things that's kind of in line. So the music kind of attracts the people with the same outlook. I don't know whether that's just the lyrics or whether it's actually the music or a combination of both. But I find it to be a very good sort of community glue as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It brings people together, you know. It's something to share. It's like a lot of the good things in life are, I mean, I'd say vast majority of things in life are better shared. Apart, you know, bodily functions, perhaps, they're best kept private. perhaps the odd, you know, the odd thing like that, but a view, you know, a walk, or a, you know, whatever, a piece of music is 99 times out of 100 is better shared with someone. You say, look at that, you know, and they go, yeah, I can see what you're seeing. Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah. Isn't it great to be here now, you know? And music does that, you know, it's like, but then again, it's got the other thing where you can just, I mean, I think that if you're looking at an incredible landscape, you'd wish for someone to be there,
I think you would.
Sometimes with music, you can just lose yourself completely, you know, but then again, there's many times I said, God, I've got to play this to someone now.
But then the really disappointing thing is when they say, oh, that's all right.
They're not bad. I suppose so, yeah, because landscape like the Earth is undeniable. You know, you say, that is incredible, and they say, yeah, it is, I agree. You know, or... So, yeah, I don't know, going round in circles.
That's talking about subjectivity.
I suppose,
you know,
it is.
Which music is... Stepping away from that a little bit, when we last spoke, you said that recorded music didn't make you very much money, it kept things ticking over, but you made most of the music through gigs. And I was going to ask you, in the light of what's happened to the economy recently, what sort of impact has that had on a jobbing musician?
Well, on the CD sales, very little.
Yeah.
Because the people who know me and they...
They'll stick with you anyway.
Yeah, I think so. And that's great because that's ticking over and it's working. The live thing, well, it's... I mean, we're still going strong, but it's been... it's been... it was a very lean January, let's put it that way.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Because I know last year festivals got hit quite badly. Because a lot of people didn't bother going.
So many festivals, and there's so many people trying to make a buck, you know, putting festivals on.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a big festival every weekend, you know.
Yeah.
People can't... I mean, less people are going abroad for their holidays, so they think, oh, we'll go for a festival for our holidays instead. But I don't think that's filled the gap, really, with the amount of festivals there are. And quite a few festivals went under, I think, because they're just reaching too far.
Yeah, you know? They've had to rein it back in.
Absolutely.
You know.
But they are great. I love them.
You're doing some this year, aren't you? You might as well say what they are.
Yeah, the only one that's confirmed is Glastonbury.
Oh, of course, yes.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Very pleased with that. Yeah. I'm happy to be going back there. Mad sort of temporary city that it is.
I think I'm a bit old for it now. I've become a bit curmudgeonly. I go for smaller festivals.
Well, I like those smaller ones with families and you know, just a nicer vibe, really. Big enough to get lost in after a couple.
Yeah.
But not too big that you
not
can't
oppressive
get back
or
to
scary
where you
want
to
or,
be. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And that usually the music is targeted or a little bit thematic with those festivals. I find that you can pick one that suits you, you know, rather than something like Glastonbury that's just so massive. All you ever do is see two songs by someone and you move on to something else.
You played at Trowbridge a couple of years ago.
Great.
Which we went to.
Yeah, I love
we've
that
we've
one.
Been every year since
it's
then.
It's a great,
again this
great
year.
One.
Really
yeah.
nice.
Well, I spoke to the fiddler who plays for Levs, and he said, I'm on this year at Beautiful Days, so that means nothing. I've spoken to the guy who runs the Llama Tree Festival.
Oh, yes, I've been to that a few times.
He said, I'm definitely playing there this year, so that means nothing. but anyway, what are the other rumours? I was supposed to be doing Cambridge Folk Festival, but I don't think I am. What was the other one? There's another good one. came in.
I think you've covered all the ones.
Oh, Trowbridge was the other one that was.
Oh, well, possible, is it?
Supposed to be doing it again, yeah.
Well, I'd love it if you turned up.
But we'll see.
Okay.
I think they, you know, they get the headliners and then work their way down from there.
Yeah, sure.
And then if there's no one that can, you know, play the spoons, they ring me, you know. So.
Well, you know, good old reliable.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, he'll do it, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm local to that one as well, so. It's easy.
Yes. No, I realise that because you, when we saw you there, you recited the Wiltshire thingy,
course,
and it went down really, really well, and I was really chuffed. That was amazing. Talking of songs, and still going back to the music industry thing, you've got a kind of interesting song on the new album about the music industry, or so it seems to me.
Yeah.
Pop Fiction.
Yeah.
Any comments? Anything to say about that, or should it just stand on its own merit?
I think it's one of those things, if I had a record company, it would never have been released.
Yeah.
And that's one of the beauties of doing it solo, doing it my way, is I can do that sort of thing and just let it happen, you know. And I love it, you know, I love being able to do that.
Yeah, I can see the freedom of being.
Yeah, exactly, which is great. I've always been a fan of film noir. Always been a fan of Dead Men Don't Wear.
Oh, I love that, Steve Martin.
It's one of my
amazing
favorites,
yeah.
And there's a friend of mine called Stash who I've impersonated as the character. And the other influence is an Australian singer called Dave Graney, who I think's fantastic. He's such a big tongue-in-cheek rock star.
Yeah.
But he's also written one of the greatest lyrics of all time in my book. It still makes me laugh, and it's so brilliant. It twists around itself. It's a song called Rock and Roll Is Where I Hide. He's an original guy, a real one-off, and a great talent. The music, he's a great talent.
Okay.
He's a fantastic talent, and he's an influence on that as well.
Right.
But I just wanted to, I suppose the song is about the way that it was sort of inspired by the re-release of Hallelujah.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Leona Lewis, or one of those? Samantha Burton?
I managed to eradicate it from my brain.
I don't fucking know who it was.
Yeah.
But it was like erasing the memory of one of the best songs ever written and covering it in icing sugar and making it banal and useless to people. You know, a great song, yeah, and it great that it was re-released and great that it was all the fuss made about it, but the people who bought it and listened to it
may not even have known.
Didn't realise what it was.
And that's not the first time that's happened.
No, exactly.
Even the Pink Floyd thing, what was the Pink Floyd tune that came out a couple of years ago? Somebody covered.
Oh, yeah.
And again, there was people.
Comfortably Numb.
Yeah, yeah. And I found that really funny. But,
no, it's awful.
It's regurgitating. And it's
awful. Yeah. And there's. It happens all the time. I'm a grumpy old man now, but that, you know.
Join the club, mate.
I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. You know,
yeah.
And so the song is about how the music is, or how green money is turning the music industry into assassins of our conscience and our memory about the good music that's gone before and pasting it all over with this
shit. I mean, some would say it's always been a bit like that, but it seems to have started eating its own.
It's like every week there's something new that was something better last week.
Yeah.
You know.
But then wouldn't they have said that, you know, Elvis was basically regurgitating?
Oh, come on. Elvis is one of the greatest performers the world's ever seen. You know, he's amazing.
Weren't Zeppelin regurgitating old blues standards?
Fair enough.
I'm just being tongue in cheek, but you see the point.
Yeah, no, I do see the point, but Zeppelin were fucking amazing.
Yeah, I know.
Samantha Burke is not amazing. There's nothing amazing about her, you know, to me, I'm afraid. You know, and it's not just because I'm an old person. You know.
You're the same age as me, but my hair's considerably greater than yours.
Okay, well, I feel younger now.
Good, right. I'm pleased to be of service.
I've just got forthright views.
Yeah.
That's all. I don't know. So it's about ostensibly the potential murder of music by money.
Okay, that's good enough. I mean, if you listen to it, then you can get the context from the film noir side of it and think about it.
But it's a bit of fun as well, you know, and it's a playing with words, which I love to do, and role play, and it's just a bit of fun. And I know damn well it'll be the first one that gets skipped every time, you know. But I think every once in a while, people will come back to it and say, "Fucking hell, that's pretty funny, actually." You
know? Yeah.
And I think looking back in years to come, I'll be really proud that I managed to cobble that together.
Yeah, I see.
And I'll look back and say, oh, I had my moments, you know, and I'll be really pleased I put it on the album and didn't put it away somewhere in a box.
You actually got it out. Yeah.
Even though I think people will skip it, you know. I'm still know it's the right decision to put it on the album, and not at the end either, in the middle. So you have to fucking listen to it.
Right? Yeah, you can't just turn it off, you know.
Yeah, no, it's not. Like, well, there's another one coming in a minute, so we'll. You know.
Well, obviously, another of the tracks that I like, but obviously I've heard live, is the 38 song, which is the first track.
Right.
Wonderful song, really resonance. Is huge, but I wondered whether you wanted to bring us up to date with the whole charity side, and you know, let us know what's going on.
Well, it's all very exciting. It's the best thing I've ever done with my music, really. You know, apart from making the songs themselves, I've actually used it to do good. Mm. You know, and I think discovering that altruistic avenue, to quote Eddie Grant, is. A wonderful thing, you know, to be able. It's a privilege to be part of that. Love, Hope, Strength's growing and changing and carrying, moving forward all the time. This year they're going to Mount Fuji, which I'm not going to be part of for a number of reasons. But I'm still very much involved with them. And I'm planning to do Avebury Rocks next year.
Avebury
Rocks.
Right.
Yeah. Which will be a Love, Hope, Strength event.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to organise it. I'm trying to get my friends to play. And it'll be a walk down the Ridgeway, which is like the oldest road in Britain, or maybe Europe. And then a concert, you know, in either amongst the Stones themselves or in a pub car park which overlooks the Stones. It depends.
I know the pub you mean, actually.
Yeah, the Red
Lion. It's nice there.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. It depends how friendly the National Trust are going to be with it, you know.
Right.
But so that's that. The wheels are in motion for that.
Oh, that sounds good.
That's going to happen.
That sounds really good.
So we're going to play as we go down the Ridgeway.
Mm.
And if we have a bit of good weather, it'll be an amazing day, I think. So that I'm working towards that. I'm putting my energies for the Love, Hope, Strength into that rather than go to Japan for the track there.
Oh, okay.
And also the last guitar, not this guitar, but the last one, which has been on the last four albums.
Yeah.
And on the DVD, and it's been up Mount Everest, Kilimanjaro, and Machu Picchu.
Yep.
And there's a lot of these songs were written on, if not almost all of them. I'm going to raffle that.
Oh.
Sell tickets for it.
Oh, right.
And the money will go to the foundation.
Oh, that's a lovely idea.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that in my little world it's quite a star, that guitar, so might raise a few bob for the foundation.
I think it will, yeah.
Mm. But at £10,000 a ticket, you'd hope that.
Well, I'll have 10 then. I mean, what you said about the altruistic side of it, I think I said in the last interview, so I'm repeating myself now, but it was very obvious that it had connected so deeply. Mm. And it was, you know, quite something to see. I mean, it's a great thing.
Yeah, it's just. Well, we all. I think most people, they don't grow up and think, what can I get out of life?
You know,
how can I get one over on someone else and beat them down? And well, people I know anyway, they're not like that. They're much more likely to say, what can I do that's useful?
I think most people are like that. Yeah. I think they're perhaps trained to be gits.
Yes.
As they grow up.
Yeah. That's right.
But I don't think intrinsically people are like that.
No. And I think people learn that to get any worth for themselves in this short lifespan, you have to feel like you have contributed to society and the planet or whatever. And if you do that, then your life is so much richer, and it's a real richer feeling, you know, that you're not just born by accident and it's pointless.
Yeah.
That, okay, you are born by accident, but your part of it hasn't been pointless because you've done something. I can understand those people who give up their lives and go off and look after, you know, sick people in Africa or whatever. Unfortunately, I like chicken jalfrezi and cobra a bit too much for that.
They might be waiting for us to stop talking before they bring it, actually.
No,
they
haven't even done any eye contact.
No. Other people have got better food who came in later.
Yeah, that's right. People just come in later. Yeah.
I think they'll be here soon.
Yeah.
Some of them will carry your cob.
Yeah.
Well, we've almost talked long enough. I just wanted to talk to you extremely briefly about politics.
Yeah.
I think the pair of us share a fairly robust view about the use of the political parties and etc. But then you've been making some comments about one or two things on tour, which I won't spoil for people if they're coming to see you after this. But do we have any hope of pulling ourselves out of the shit with the political party system,
of course we do. Of course we do. There's always hope. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I think it's less likely because the people who are drawn to politics see it as a career move. I mean, even our kids now are thinking of their career way before I'd even thought of.
And the curry's come as well.
You know, I'm thinking, how am I going to get off my face this weekend? Or how am I going to? Where am I going to cycle to? What are we going to play with my mates? And the kids today are thinking, you know, I need to do this subject and this subject if I want to be a whatever it is. They're so channeled and funneled into the system a lot more than we were, which is good way in a way. It's good in a way, but it's not good in other ways, and I think our politicians are a product of that.
I think they are.
You know, they don't. A lot of them haven't got the ideals that started people like Dennis Skinner and Tony Benn.
Well, Michael Foot as well. I thought about him. He was such a, you know, staunch old style. He actually
he was
fought
just
for what he believed.
Didn't care what he looked like.
Yeah.
Didn't care, you know, he's a great orator because he had a great mind, you know, and he had a big heart, good guy. But he was unelectable in this age. He was the last one.
That's right.
When it all changed with Kinnock, didn't it? I mean, it was Kinnock became a presidential guy, and it was like a different kettle of fish altogether. And then just the style really murdered substance, you know, after that. But I think Blair did some great things in this country, you know, really.
Do you?
I think he made one really...
He fought an illegal
stupid,
war.
Stupid mistake. But the, you know, the public services in this country, education and the health service, have done all right under this government.
Right.
I think. And a lot better than they would have done under... the alternative.
You're less cynical than me then, actually. It's interesting.
I think you know, without his ambition to be this messiah figure and his stupid allying of himself to God and chimpanzees, he might have, you know, been one of the greats. But I do think that the human spirit and the idealism and
will win through.
There'll be good people who will come up, and they'll be chat on by the powers that be, as usual, as they always are. But there'll be a counterbalance to to the careerists and the real cynics, you know.
Well, that's interesting. If you think about it swinging so far in one direction that people will eventually say, oh, look, you know, yeah, enough now, let's get some conscience back in it, then perhaps that will happen.
I think there's always a chance it will. It's a shame when you watch Question Time and the best person on it's Will Self.
Oh, yeah, you know. Yeah. Right, well, it's curry time now, so I suppose you better wrap the interview up. is there anything you want to say to the jealous people with rumbling tummies?
Ah, well, I don't know, really.
Yeah.
Bon appetit. Where's what's that?
That's chicken salad.
Oh, sorry.
Help yourself.
Got that. No. I'll, this is mine here, isn't it? Well, thank you for listening, folks, and obviously don't vote Tory wherever you are.
And, sounds like good advice.
Yeah, just for a laugh, if you are a Tory, vote Liberal.
You know. Okay, thank you very much.
Right, mate. I'll get the hang of it one day and
that was all right.
Say something sensible.
That was all fine. That was 39 and a half minutes, so I'll chop that down to half. I'll chop that down to half an hour, that's fine.
So thanks a lot, Nick, for that. And yes, we did chop it down to half an hour. We managed to cut out the whole curry ordering segment, which I thought might just be a little bit too self-indulgent, really. I'm going to play another track from the album now, and I'm going to play Amas de Blam.
Just to have known someone as beautiful as you. Yeah, you. Am I the plan? Am I the plan? Am I the plan? Am I the plan? On the roof of the world, right by the end of the sky, a little touch of evermore. Collide. Wherever I go, whatever I do, whatever I know, whatever I knew, whatever I say, whatever I play, whatever I do. I'm taking this picture of you home to remember I'm richer to have known someone as beautiful as you. Yeah, you. Am I the plan? Am I the plan? Am I the plan? Am I the plan?
Now it's time for some listener feedback. I've got quite a lot this time. First of all, from Bob Jacobs. Entertaining stuff, he says. I played this today on my travels and in the gym. Marco was in excellent form. Well done, Paul, for getting him to talk so entertainingly. Of course, he's completely wrong about the relative merits of Dream Society and Green Man. I think I prefer the revised version of Fourth World, but it was good to hear the original. You were right to choose Advertisement as the most excruciatingly embarrassing track. Juggler never was my favourite album, but that track, can't really call it a song, really is bad. I enjoyed your Australian Exiles contribution too. Any advice on which Lightning Hopkins to avoid? Because everything I've got of his so far is great. Have you seen the March edition of Uncut? Alan Jones's leader is about B.P. Fallon, with several references to Roy. Alan would probably make a good interviewee if you could persuade him. Jimmy Page's interview in Mojo was good too. He sings Roy's praises as a guitarist, repeating the old story about how they met, and he asked him to play Blackpool. Cheers, Bob. Okay, another one from Martin Hewitt. Hi, I just listened to the 28th edition and wanted to say well done for a good job. I was a lapsed fan of RH, but the podcasts have reignited my passion for his music and has caused me to spend quite a bit on CDs from the website. I also had trouble locating vinyl when I first heard his music in the 90s, so I've enjoyed the previous podcast interviews with people explaining how they got into Roy's music. I'm going to the Joanna Newsom gigs now just to see Roy live, as I've only had one experience of him live, and agree that official bootlegs would be a good extra revenue stream for him. I used to work in the music industry, so the discussions on its state are always good and, in my view, well informed. Been meaning to email you for months to say well done. Your podcast is the only one I ever listen to every episode. Thank you very much, Martin, and hopefully we can catch up at the gigs. A reply from Steve Duke regarding what he calls the Turkey Challenge. Hi, Paul. Thanks for putting out the recent podcast, which I listened to at the weekend and enjoyed, although I suspect there's a rule by which most people think their own voice sounds crap when played back. You're not wrong there, Steve. You certainly rose to the challenge with that last track you played from Jugular. It was truly awful, and the ending is one of the most bizarre and crass things I've heard on a record. What were they thinking? But maybe, like Oscar Wilde said, the only thing in the world worse than being talked about is not being talked about. I finally got round to buying Stormcock and Flashes from royharper.com and loved both. I think the DVD might be next, followed by maybe Flat Baroque, but probably not Jugular. It must have been the sardines. Best regards, Steve. Steve, don't let me put you off Jugular. That is a fantastic album, apart from perhaps that last 40 seconds or so. From James Stewart, Canadian Connection. After discovering your podcast 2 years after the fact, I've been devouring the first 20 while at work and then pleasantly surprised and pleased. You've done a first-rate job and an excellent choice of musician. I'm in my mid-50s and discovered Roy around the time of punk, hearing Flat Baroque and Stormcock, which, by the way, is pronounced Baroque, after the phrase flat, broke and busted. And you're absolutely right, I think. I've just always said Baroque, so I shall continue to do so to annoy everyone. I discovered his site around 7 years ago and listened to clips of various songs, remembering how good he was. I saw him solo in Montreal around 85 and firmly agree with you that Roy sounds best stripped down to acoustic and voice. I love all the obscure songs you've played, but after hearing the interviews with Roy, I wondered if the podcast is going to eventually lose its legs. You mentioned in an offhand manner about doing another podcast involving another RH Robin Hitchcock, and I think that would be a perfect follow-up. Similar, oblique and abstract style. Are you deliberately staying clear about talking about drugs and Roy's music with all its positive and negative ramifications concerning the Harper persona? Congrats on a job well done, James Stewart. Thanks, James. Regarding the drug thing, I haven't deliberately steered clear of it, although I like to not invoke the wrath of Apple and get thrown off of iTunes for having too many drug references. It's just that I don't really have anything too much to say about it. Perhaps when I get Roy on again, I should talk to him more about how that's influenced his songwriting and musical style over the years. I think it's an interesting topic, actually, and a perfectly valid one. I don't know enough about Robin Hitchcock to do a Hitchcock podcast, I'm afraid. So I doubt that will be happening, but I don't know. Peter Fincham, a very brief message. Subject, you're so wrong. How can you play Advertisement in the context of the worst Roy song? It's an anthem. There's several songs which are far worse than his great homage to excess. Well, there you go. Differing views there. Finally, I had some emails from Keith Bedford, who you will remember is our roving radio reporter. And he says, catching up on some radio recordings in my car on the way to work, and he caught the BBC Six Music Stuart McKinney Freak Zone programme on the 1st of November, which he featured Stormcock. And Keith has sent me an audio snippet, which I'll play for you in a moment. Keith is also desperately trying to get Royal Festival Hall tickets to see Roy supporting Joanna and has had no luck so far because they're sold out. I've just got this feeling there'll be some returns, so I think it's worth trying. He also says that another ticket agency was selling tickets for £90 per ticket. That's a complete rip-off, isn't it? That's quite shocking, actually. Anyway, okay, so here's the excerpt from BBC Six Music.
Back to 1971 and our featured album, Stormcock, by Roy Harper. Now, I did say that there are some special guests on this show. At the time of release, this next track, The Same Old Rock, featured a guest appearance by a guitarist called S. Flavius Mercurius. Now it can be revealed who he is, but perhaps I'll tell you in 10 or so minutes' time when we've heard the track. The Same Old Rock, Roy Harper. S. Flavius Mercurius on guitar there on Roy Harper's Stormcock, as I said, or rather The Same Old Rock from the album Stormcock. And now it can be revealed, and I'm sure you probably guessed it anyway if you know anything of Roy Harper's backstory, one Jimmy Page played on that record. That's the solo on there by one Jimmy Page. There's been another track from this album a bit later on. It is well known for being a huge influence on Joanna Newsom, particularly on her album East. And the quote here that I found at the wiki site also says that Johnny Marr is on record as saying that Stormcock is intense and beautiful and clever. You'll get another chance to make your own mind up when I play a final track in the last half hour of the show. stuart.sixmusic@bbc.co.uk. But we'll conclude tonight with the final track from Stormcock. Fairly lengthy one, as indeed are all the things on Stormcock. Hope you've enjoyed this Roy Harper album. This is Me and My Woman, and I'll see you next week.
Thanks for sending that in, Keith. Now, some of you in the UK may know that the BBC has gone completely mad and announced a whole bunch of stupid cost-cutting measures, including shutting down BBC Six Music. Completely insane. I can almost believe they're doing it as a publicity stunt, to be honest, because BBC Six Music is the only station that plays interestingly non-commercial music. I hasten to add, I'm not necessarily including Roy in there, but that Freak Zone programme is a delight every week, playing completely bizarre stuff, and it's quite a challenging programme to listen to at times. And let's face it, most of the other output of the BBC network is not challenging, so they'd be fools to get rid of it. And if you care at all about that, you can find all kinds of online petitions and groups and all sorts going on to try and persuade the BBC not to cancel BBC Six Music. Okay, credits and copyright, right? The podcast is issued under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 2.0, UK, England and Wales licence, which means you can freely share it with others, but you can't change it, claim you made it or charge for it. The Nick Harper music in this podcast is used by a kind permission of Sangreal and is not for copying or redistribution. The background music to the feedback was by Logic Gate, courtesy of Magnitune.com. You can find two of their albums on there. It's very pleasant, very good ambient analog synth music that I really like. If you want to send in a voicemail, you can send me an MP3, pd@stormcock.net, or you can call the voicemail number if you're in the UK, 01223 850 282, plus 441223 850 282. If you're outside the UK, those calls are limited to 90 seconds, so you have to be succinct. If you download this podcast through iTunes and you haven't already, please give us a review. And that's about it for this podcast. I'm going to finish with one more tune from Nick. This time it's from the Smithereens album, and the track is Twisted. See you next time.
I don't wanna be no yo-yo, up and down, stop, chop, chop, the go-go. I'm looking for another way of living. For this boss, a dead loss, I see a steam and sweat, I never seem to get myself across, looking for another way of living. I got a pulse to support, and I'm gonna feel it with meaning. So many riddles and codes and sneaky little toads, no yeses, no noes, I'm looking for another way of living.
and the junk mail and the fairy tales. No hammers, no nails, I'm looking for another way of living. I got a pulse to support, and I'm gonna fill it with meaning. Get me twisted out of shame. Never gonna get me twisted. You're never gonna get me twisted out of shame. Never gonna get me twisted. So clean, so pure, so dear, so true. So lead me to my highway. I'm going that way anyway. Possession, material obsession, just part of the possession. I'm looking for another way of living. Your little pay packets are straight jacket, I'll get my own racket. I'm looking for another way of living. I've got a pulse to support. I got a pulse to support. I got a pulse to support. Fill it with meaning. You're never gonna get me twisted out of shape. You're never gonna get me twisted. Never gonna get me twisted out of shape. Never gonna get me twisted.
Right, Thunderbirds a go. Yep.
Five, four, three.
Yeah, Big Chris is coming as well, by the way.
How is he?
Yeah.
Trouser Chris.
Yeah. It'll be a long night.
Oh, he's this way, isn't he?
Well, every night's a long night for him.
No,
he's staying with a friend of mine, so. Because he was trying to find out the cheap B&B in Hotford. It's not that cheap a town, really.
No.
He turns out in the most amazing places.
Yeah, it's a nice place, actually.
In Paris, we were in Paris, and he just walks in, and he goes up to the bar and goes, "Pint of Penforth, please." It's just brilliant.
Pint of Penforth. It's
just a little tiny bottle of that, like four for a pint.
It is a nice town.
Paris?
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Penforth. Is it Brune or Blonde, though? You've got to have a Brune.
It's nice. Nice place, Hartford. Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons I moved here was to make it easier to go and see William. Not Piers. Piers.
Piers. William.
William, yeah. Because he lives up in Kettering with his mum.
Okay.
So it's easy to get on the A1 up.
Yeah.
And I got fed up of living in London.
Is it still
commuting
out for London, is it?
Yeah, Vicky commutes in.
It's not really commutable.
It's actually got a really crappy train line.
How long does it take? Depending on which line I go on, either an hour or 2 hours.
Wow.
That's exaggerating a bit. The actual train journey is 40, 45 or 55, 60. But then you've got the tube at the other end and everything.
Yeah. Where do you work in London?
Holborn.
Oh,
and it's the
half
an hour between trains that's the killer.
What about why don't you go from Harpenden down the Thames Link? You tried that?
Yeah, you'd have to get to Harpenden first.
It's it is what it is. I mean, I could move back to Leicester and get in quicker.
Yeah.
So what is it, 70 miles or
something? No, it's 20. Like 20, 26 20, miles or something. Yeah, it's just a really crappy train, yeah.
It's a serious motor train.
going to have a good
result.
Now,
it's to London.
Yeah, but that's the car.
That's why I have to edit it, you see.
You have to edit it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying.
You were thinking about getting a scooter, weren't you?
Yeah.
You could always look at going to a mainline station on your scooter.
What about an autogyro?
Now you're talking.
I fancy the scooter.
By the time you pay for parking and everything, it's...
Yeah, driving's not on, really.
No. And getting into... I mean, going all the way... Oh, sorry, I thought you meant to a better station. Yeah, driving into London, it's a totally longer.
I know when the line was broken for a long time, people were driving to... Is it Edgware? And then catching the tube. But again, you know... Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, we're ready, all right. We're ready to order.
Thank you.
Order. Great, thanks. All right, good. Just finish your business.
That's all right.
Okay,
no problem.
What can I get for you?
Ladies first.
Can I get a veggie dansack, please?
Vegetable dansack. Okay.
Could I have a Gialfrese, please?
Chicken.
Chicken Gialfrese with pilau ras.
Have a chicken Gialfrese, please.
Okay.
Does that come with fresh coriander?
Yes.
Great.
Rice?
How many rice do we need between us all, do you think? Is it one each, or...?
I'm strictly a third to half, so...
Yeah, I'm a half as well.
Oh, you can
pilau rice here between us? Yeah. Okay.
What, three or four?
Well, we'll order one. You got one.
And we'll have one between us, so three in total, I think, yeah.
Okay.
And a sard bhaji, please.
Sard bhaji.
What's the other thing? Oh, can I have some lime pickle, please?
With the main course?
Please, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the waiter will serve you, just ask them. Please.
Thank you.
Could I have chicken sub, please?
Chicken sub?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like ordering
cornflakes.
Yeah.
Are you being awkward?
Yeah, I'm just thinking, do I want a chicken sub? No, I'll have a corn.
Chicken?
Chicken corn, yeah. Be boring.
Anything else? Naan bread?
No,
not
tonight.
For me, thank you.
Just three rice, didn't it?
Yep.
Please, thanks.
Thank you.
Can I just take that menu, please? Thank you.